There's a particular kind of story we love to tell. It usually starts in a garage or a small apartment, or with someone working a job that had nothing to do with where they ended up. It ends with success, big, visible, undeniable success. And somewhere in the middle, there's a sentence that does a lot of quiet work. They built it all themselves. We say it like it's the highest compliment available. But what if that sentence is doing something else entirely? What if it's not describing reality so much as erasing most of it? I'm Andre Barbouras, and this is the Unlearning Project, a podcast from barbouras.com, where every couple of weeks we take one assumption that usually goes unexamined and we crack it open. Today's assumption is the self-made story itself, the idea that individual achievement is, at its core, individual, that the right combination of talent, effort, and grit is enough to explain how someone got from there to here. It's one of the most comforting stories we tell, and it's also one of the most incomplete. Let's start with what the self-made narrative actually does, structurally, because it's doing more than just telling a story about one person. Every self-made story has a shape. It starts at a point of disadvantage. Humble beginnings, scarcity, obscurity, and ends at the point of success. Everything in between gets compressed into a single causal chain. Effort led to outcome. And because the story is framed around one person, everything that isn't that person tends to fade into the background. Not because it's being deliberately hidden, necessarily, but because the format of the story doesn't have room for it. A garage startup story has room for one protagonist. It doesn't have room for the bank that approved a loan based on family collateral, the free time that came from not needing a second job, the social network that made the first 10 customers possible, the public infrastructure, roads, education systems, legal protections that made any of it operable in the first place. None of that scaffolding disappears in reality. It disappears in the story. And stories, especially the ones that get repeated often enough to become cultural templates, end up shaping how we think about reality more than reality itself does. This is where it's worth bringing in someone like Antonio Gramsci, the Italian theorist who wrote about what he called cultural hegemony, the idea that the most effective form of power isn't the kind that forces people to comply, but the kind that gets people to believe the existing order is simply natural, neutral, or earned. Gramsci was writing about class structures in early 20th century Europe, but the underlying mechanism translates remarkably well to how we talk about success today. If people broadly believe that outcomes are primarily the result of individual merit, that the system is, fundamentally, a fair sorting mechanism, then the system itself doesn't need to be defended. It defends itself through the stories people tell about the people who succeeded within it. And here's the part that makes this more than just an interesting historical parallel. The self-made narrative doesn't just describe success. It implicitly describes the absence of success too. If success is mostly about individual effort and grit, then the logical, if usually unspoken, corollary is that lack of success is mostly about a lack of effort and grit. The story doesn't need to say this explicitly. It's baked into the structure. Once you accept that the protagonist did it all themselves, you've also implicitly accepted that everyone who didn't do it simply didn't do enough. This is where the erasure stops being just incomplete and starts being useful. Useful, specifically, to whoever benefits from people not examining the scaffolding too closely. Think about who tells self-made stories and who they're usually told about. They're rarely neutral, biographical exercises. They tend to circulate most actively around people who are already successful, and they tend to be retold, amplified, and reinforced by the very systems and institutions that helped produce that success in the first place. A company benefits from its founder being seen as a singular visionary rather than someone operating within and benefiting from a particular set of market conditions, timing, capital access, and structural advantages. An industry benefits from its top performers being framed as proof that the industry rewards merit, because that framing attracts more participants, more belief, more buy-in, without requiring anyone to examine whether the playing field was actually level to begin with. In other words, the myth of the self-made person isn't just a story about an individual. It's a story that systems tell about themselves using individuals as the evidence. Now, I want to be careful here, because there's a version of this conversation that tips into something I don't think is accurate or useful, which is the idea that effort, skill, and persistence don't matter at all, that everything is purely structural, and individuals are just passive vessels for circumstance. That's not what this is about. People do work hard. People do develop genuine skill. Effort is real, and it matters. The issue isn't that effort is fake. The issue is that effort alone has never been a sufficient explanation for outcomes. And yet it's frequently presented as if it were, both by the people who succeeded and by the broader culture that celebrates them. The scaffolding doesn't replace the effort. It sits underneath it, mostly invisible, determining which efforts get to convert into outcomes and which efforts, equally real, equally sustained, don't. Let's bring this closer to something more everyday, because this isn't just about billionaire founders and their origin stories. It shows up in much smaller, more ordinary ways, in how we talk about career trajectories inside organizations, for instance. Someone gets promoted quickly, and the story that circulates is usually about them, their drive, their initiative, their ability to make things happen. What's less visible and less discussed is the mentor who happened to advocate for them in a room they weren't in. The timing of a reorganization that happened to create an opening exactly when they were ready for it. The fact that their working style happened to align well with what leadership in that specific organization at that specific moment was primed to notice and reward. None of that is sinister, but none of it is self-made either. It's circumstance interacting with effort in ways that are almost impossible to fully untangle, which is exactly why the simpler story, the one that credits the individual entirely, tends to win out. It's easier to tell, it's easier to hear, and it flatters everyone involved, the person being praised, and the system being implicitly validated. There's also a quieter cost to this myth, one that's more personal. If you've internalized the idea that success is primarily a function of individual effort, then by the same logic, your struggles, wherever you are right now, must also be primarily a function of your effort, or lack of it. This is where the self-made myth stops being just a story about other people and starts shaping how people interpret their own lives. Setbacks that have obvious structural components, economic conditions, access, timing, who you happen to know or not know, get processed instead as personal failures, not because anyone explicitly tells you that's what they are, but because the dominant story about how outcomes work doesn't leave much room for any other explanation. So what does it look like to hold a more accurate version of this story without swinging into the opposite extreme of saying nothing anyone does matters? I think it starts with treating scaffolding and effort as two different layers of the same picture, rather than competing explanations where one has to be right and the other wrong. Effort operates within a structure. The structure determines, to a significant degree, what effort is even capable of producing, what doors it can open, what risks it can absorb, what margin for error it has. Two people can apply genuinely comparable effort and arrive at very different outcomes, not because one of them was more self-made than the other, but because the scaffolding underneath them was different, sometimes massively different, in ways that were mostly invisible to both of them at the time. Seeing this clearly doesn't have to lead to cynicism, and it doesn't have to lead to dismissing anyone's genuine accomplishments. But it does change something important about how we extend credit, how we extend criticism, and, maybe most importantly, how generously or harshly we judge people, including ourselves, based on where they've ended up. Here's the question I want to leave you with. Think about your own story, wherever you currently are, professionally or otherwise. If you had to tell it as a self-made story, what would have to be left out? Not because it's untrue, but because it doesn't fit the format. And once you start noticing what gets left out of your own story, what does that tell you about everyone else's? That's it for this episode of the Unlearning Project. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another one. Until then, take a closer look at the scaffolding, yours and everyone else's.